Hello, everyone, and welcome to a telephone town meeting with Congressman Kanjorski, where Congressman Kanjorski will answer your questions and discuss issues important to you. My name is Abby, and I'm Congressman Kanjorski's communications director. I will be moderating the call this evening. This telephone town meeting operates like a large conference call, making it possible for many constituents to listen to Congressman Kanjorski at the same time. If you would like to ask Congressman Kanjorski a question, please press star 3 now or any time during the call, and you will be placed in our question queue. To begin the call, Congressman Kanjorski will make some opening remarks, and then he will take questions from callers. Once again, please press star 3 now or during the call if you would like to ask Congressman Kanjorski a question. Congressman, please go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Abby, and good evening, everyone. It's the middle of December. We're all anticipating the coming of Christmas, but we're down here working yet on the people's business, I hope, and maybe sometime by the end of this week we'll finish up for Christmas. What I'd like to talk to you about and what I'd like to have in this town hall meeting is a very open session, so feel absolutely free to call in and ask any question of any sort, and you can do that by pressing star 3 to be put into the queue to ask a question. Now, what I would like to talk about is some of the things we've done here in the last week or two that have been very important to me and very important to you. One of the points is we finally finished in the House of Representatives last Friday the bill to reform regulatory conditions for the financial service industry of the United States. We passed one major bill, but it actually contained 8 individual bills that were combined together and consisted of about 1,260 pages. So it was a very complicated piece of legislation. I participated in drafting 4 of the 8 bills myself, and quite frankly, we took months and months to draft the bills, to have hearings on the bills, and finally just to have the bills presented to the floor with amendments offered. And I dare say an awful lot of amendments were attempted, over 240. We wound it up after 3 days on the floor. Some of you may have had the opportunity to see the proceedings on C-SPAN, and if you did, I have to apologize because it was a very complicated issue that we were involved in, and not an awful lot of people who aren't financially inclined would have understood all the proceedings. But I can assure you that it was a hard-worked effort for a very simple reason. It's the use of this bill that we hope will prevent the things that happened last year in our economy and brought us to the brink of meltdown, not only in the United States, but in the world. And hopefully, through the reform movement of this regulatory structure in the United States, we will prevent that from ever happening again. And more, that we will not have to use bailouts to bail out the financial corporations of this country in order to prevent meltdown. Now, in talking about that, may I say that we've done a pretty good job. Over the last year, if we were thinking about it a year ago at this time, we were in the throes of not knowing where we would end up, whether we were on our way to a Great Depression or whether we were on our way to the end of the country and the economic system as we know it. And here we are a year later, and this month unemployment declined by only, employment declined by only 11,000 jobs for the whole month, and that indicates to most of us and most of the economists in the world that we're turning the corner. It's not that we're back by a long shot, but at least we're not further slipping over the edge. And there's an anticipation that over the next year or year and a half, recovery will be had. We'll be increasing jobs at some time in the spring, and eventually the activity in our economy and the economy of the world will start to get back to what we would call normal. But we won't be at normal of 5 or 6% unemployment for several years. It's going to take us quite a time. Hopefully by this time next year, we'll be under 10% nationally in unemployment and on our way to a recovery stage, which we can be proud of. But I think as one of the aides to the president said on Meet the Press the other day, the recession won't be over until every American that had a job and lost that job has an opportunity to get a job again. That's what we have to strive for. Technically speaking, from an economist standpoint, we would hear them say, and we practically could agree, that the recession is over. So if you're out of a job, you're in foreclosure, if you can't provide your children with Christmas that you'd hoped for, that doesn't represent to us in America the end of a recession. So all of us really should put together. Let me stop for a moment there while I'm talking about all these technical things of economics and stability. You know, we shouldn't miss the opportunity at this season of the year to realize that we are actually all the same. We're human beings. We have children. We have families. We have needs. And this is a great time to take the opportunity to reach out to our fellow citizens, particularly those that have been hard hit by the economic conditions of the last year. If you have a family member, if you have a friend, if you have a neighbor that isn't quite yet making it, that's been laid off, if you get an opportunity, you should check on them, see that for Christmas they're going to have a reasonable Christmas dinner. If they need some toys for the children, that you will help them either through your supply of toys or through Toys for Tots or other areas where little kids who are in no way responsible for the recession will have a Christmas that will make them happy instead of sad. And hopefully we'll all take that time. And if we do, it will benefit each one of us because there is a certain specialty about giving. You give, you inevitably receive, and you receive good cheer and the experience of love. And that's something that's necessary today in hard times and in times of war than in most times. And so if we pull together this way through this recession, a year or 2 years from now, we'll think back and remember these days with some sort of fondness that we came together as humans and we helped each other out. And as a result, we know we're stronger and we can meet those challenges in the future. Now, we're going to work on the legal things that have to be done, the legislative things that have to be done down here in Washington. But we're counting on you, particularly I'm counting on you, my constituents, to do the things in northeastern central Pennsylvania that's necessary and what makes us so proud to say we're from northeastern or central Pennsylvania. And that is show your good heart, good feelings toward people. And on the other hand, if I can be of assistance to you, I hope you take the opportunity to call my office. We can't guarantee that we can solve all problems. Certainly we can't. But occasionally we can help out when you can least experience it or expect it, and that's what I do, and that's what my staff does every day down here in Washington and in our Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and Pocono offices. So if you need some extra help and we can be of any help to you, please give us a call. That's what we're here for. Now, I've talked an awful lot, and as I said, the town meeting today is open to any question. I'm going to remind you again, if you want to ask a question, you can press *3 to ask that question. You'll be put in a queue, and someone will take your question, and we'll have it. Hopefully, we can move through more questions tonight than we have in the past, because I've been told to keep the answers shorter than I normally do. Let's see if Abby has some questions for us. Abby?
Thank you, Congressman. And so now we will begin the question and answer section of the call. And once again, please press *3 if you would like to ask Congressman Kandorski a question. And we will take a question from Don from Weatherly. Don, please go ahead.
Yeah, Congressman.
Yes, Don.
My question is, I'm a senior citizen. Mm-hmm. We're getting cut on our Social Security this year. We're not getting our raise, okay? They're going to up our Medicare, which is going to, it's going to bring less in my Social Security check that I get every month. How come everybody else is getting theirs down there, and they're just seem to be picking on the senior citizens to take it out on us and not get our raise?
Well, the truth is, they're not actually picking on you. What happened was that Social Security increases that we're used to seeing every year are dependent on the cost of living increase, the COLA. And this year, because of the recession and bad times, actually we didn't have inflation this year. So when you go back and you study the mathematics and statistics of the year, you find out that in order to have the purchasing power at the end of this year compared to the beginning of this year, there's no difference, so therefore there's no addition that has to be made on the COLA. That doesn't make sense sometimes, because you'd say to me, well, things cost me more in December than they did in January, and I have less money, and bills did go up, and particularly Medicare payments and other things went up. That's not true. Well, the reality is we set the COLA based on an index that is established by working people. And what's wrong with that is that if you're a working person, you probably spend more money than you do for transportation than you do for medical services proportionally compared to senior citizens. Whereas if you're a senior citizen, your higher expense would be in medical charges and not transportation. So I've prepared and participated in legislation that wants to correct the COLA. And the correction we want to make is that we have a special senior citizen COLA, taking into consideration those factors which are most important in the lives of senior citizens and would indicate the reflective condition of how they were in. Now, that's still pending as a piece of legislation, but I'm supporting it and been a close part of it. Further, I'd like to say that we are working to try and get other things. We have one piece in one of the recovery programs asking for a one-time payment of $250 to every senior citizen, as we did in the early part of the year in the stimulus package. Whether that will pass and make up for the lost COLA, we're not certain. All I can say is, you know, I understand how hard it is. I've talked to people every day, particularly those people on Social Security and in retirement. These are not easy times. So my heart goes out to you. We'll keep working on trying to find a good solution. Abby?
Don, thank you for your question. And we will now take a question from Roxanne from Taylor. Roxanne, please go ahead.
How you doing, Congressman Kanjorski? I wanted to tell you thank you very much for fighting for Main Street instead of Wall Street. You know, as we all do, that we come from a tough area with a history of fighting for what is right with the little people. And that's exactly what you're doing with this legislation. And you and Barney Frank were wonderful. Many of us watched you on the floor last week. My question is on the health care issue. We all see what the Senate has done are just changes to the health care bill, not really reform. When this bill gets back into the conference committee, how are you going to fight for real health care reform that helps lower the cost to the consumer and helps the uninsured? How are we going to do that, and how is the conference committee going to work this?
Very difficult. Good question. What we have now is a terrible thing as a result of the filibuster rule. Or in order to stop the filibuster, you need to assemble 60 votes in the Senate. I'm so fed up with that rule, I would be in favor of changing the rule and just going to a simple majority on everything, because I think we're paying entirely too much attention to friends of mine by the name of Joe Lieberman and others who just really are missing the point. The American people are hurting. They're fed up with a system that's very complicated, very expensive, and that keeps going up out of sight and spending twice as much on average than any other industrial nation in the world for Medicare and for medical services and for health care, and not getting, in all instances, the best health care compared to other nations. So we have to do something about it. Now, we have some choices, and they're going to be tough choices over these next several days. I don't think we can get the 60 votes, because remember now, 40 of the Republican senators will not vote for health care regardless. They've just taken the position of no. So this bill has to be carried through by the 60 Democrat votes in the Senate. And if you've ever tried to get all people to agree on any single thing, you certainly realize suddenly everybody becomes a prima donna and everybody has a better idea than their colleague. They all want to be heard and they all want to feel part. I think what the president's talking about in some of the discussions I've had with the White House and some of the leadership in the House and the Senate, what's most important is that we get a health bill passed. This will not be in concrete, but once we get a health bill passed, we can open it up as early as next year and start changing formulas and situations, some of which are we have to find a way to contain costs in a much more efficient way than we're doing in this bill. But quite frankly, if we have the choice, if we don't move forward and we therefore don't pass health care at all, what we'll have done is fallen back 15 years to when Bill Clinton was president of the United States when we lost the last health care fight, and it's taken 15 years to get to this point again. So my conclusion is we've got to pass health care now and then make a pledge to the American people that we're going to go back. Now, remember, it really doesn't take effect in all aspects until 12-13. So we have 4 years to make some significant changes between now and 12-13. And my pledge will be that I will support those changes to contain costs, to make it more uniform and applicable to everyone, and to make sure that we have a better, more attractive medical system in the United States than we've had before this time. So we'll have to work together on that. Abby?
Great. Thank you very much for your question, Roxanne. And once again, please press star 3 if you would like to ask Congressman Kanjorski a question. We will now take a question from Liz from Mountaintop. Liz, please go ahead.
Hello. I'm just concerned about all the this health care legislation, which is very expensive, and our debt that we really can't afford for the government to keep spending and getting involved in something so important to all of us as our own health care. I don't want the government involved. And I like to use your own words that you've had in your email. I think the government is really too large, too interconnected, and doing too much risky things that it's going to cause the collapse and put at risk the entire economic system because of the debt and because of all your spending.
Well, Liz, I tend to agree with you in some instances. I think certainly our deficit in the budget and our long-term debt now are extraordinarily important things and something we have to get our hands around and get to control. The president's made one pledge, and I'll take him at his word. He will not sign a health care bill that will actually drive the debt up or the deficit up. So what he means by that actually is that what he's going to insist in the structure of the health care bill that will pass is that it will not add to the debt or deficit as it presently exists. And he's doing it because he needs cost containment if we're going to get control of the debt in the United States. Now, a second item. Right now, being in the middle of coming out of a very serious recession, potentially if this were to turn around, we could end up going into another recession or even a depression. This is not the time that we can put the brakes on in terms of spending. The fact of the matter is, I don't care what everyone says, we have to keep our foot on the pedal to make sure we get and stay in recovery so that the economy comes back. Then our very first emphasis after we get to that point and we have recovery and we're no longer at risk of losing our economic system is to go full blow ahead. As a matter of fact, one of the things we're discussing right now is that we don't want to go into the increasing of the debt limit at this point. And we have to increase the debt limit because we're borrowing so much money because of the loss of revenues coming in and the expenditures associated with the war and with the recession, that in order to keep have the capacity to continue to meet those obligations, we have to increase in the next few weeks the debt limit of the United States. We only want to do that to the extent that's necessary, and then sometime in early spring, put a commission together to committed to what we call something very similar to the BRAC Commission, that we have an up and down vote on how to get control over our expenditures and our budget. Now, finally, the one fear you expressed that you're worried about losing your health care, and I sympathize with that. I think you can and will realize after the health care bill is passed that there's been an awful lot of misstatements and misinformation put out there to scare people. And there are, a lot of us don't realize, but quite frankly, there are a lot of interest groups out there that the way the health care gets structured benefits them financially directly very often. And as a result, they're willing to exaggerate. I won't say stretch the truth, but I'll say exaggerate for their own benefit. I think what we have to do is, once we pass this, take a step back, analyze what it is, and I think I can reasonably say to you where it's going to go. 80% of the bill that is pending in the Senate and 80% of what we pass in the House, all people pretty much agree with. So the differences are really only in 20% of the bill. Some of that will have to be changed. Some of it will have to be corrected. Some additions will have to be made and corrections over the next several years. But I wouldn't worry too much, quite frankly, that you're going to lose your health care. That won't happen. What you may take some solace in is that some people that don't have health care or have inferior health care today will get better health care. Let me direct myself there. I'm not talking about just the uninsured. Let me talk with those people who have pre-existing conditions. If you have a pre-existing condition and you change jobs, you lose your health care, and you can't get that pre-existing condition covered at your new job. This society cannot have people imprisoned in their work in order just to have health care. So just a minor change like that is so vitally important to all of us that this correction be made now and as soon as possible, and it will change the quality of life for so many of our people and make us so much more competitive. So all in all, Liz, don't get too worried about it. We're going to work with it. It's not something to lose a lot of sleep, but I know there's, you know, everywhere from the talk of death commissions or death panels to you name it, none of that is true. None of it exists. We're going to get through this and have a good system. And if you don't think so, ask people who 35, 40 years ago didn't believe in Medicare, and you tell them you want to take Medicare away from them, and they'll slap you down because they want to. Matter of fact, at public meetings, you can see it. Keep that government off my government-sponsored Medicare. They don't say government-sponsored. They can keep them out of my Medicare. Those are government programs. VA hospitals, government program. Medicaid is a government program. 29% of the American people have their medical services provided directly through the United States government, and to the large extent, they're mostly very happy with it. Let's hope we can get the other 70% included in that stage and have better health care at a contained cost ratio and perhaps even a decreased cost for all citizens in the United States. Thanks, Liz.
Liz, thank you very much for your question. Once again, please press *3 if you would like to ask Congressman Kandorski a question. And Congressman, I have a quick question for you. We've received a lot of questions from people because I know that and many people know that you offered legislation to prevent future taxpayer bailouts, and I was wondering if you could address this.
Well, thanks, Abby. Yes. As a matter of fact, let me say this. If you mentioned to me a year and a half ago that I would be putting a bill together, an amendment, saying that I wanted to empower a federal regulator with the capacity to make a determination to force a successful financial institution to sell assets or get out of a certain business or hire different management in the business, I'd say you're crazy, because I was a very strong and absolute defender of private enterprise. I still am. But these last 18 months have shown me some very serious failures of our economic system and the market system as practiced in the United States. To a large extent, many of the abuses and problems that we've experienced in our economy in the last 18 months really occurred because of greed and excess in our system, and that many of the people that are fighting being better regulated than they were are the very people that were responsible for doing this. And once we establish that we have a chance now to have all the people in the civilized world or the industrial world, that is, the EU and Asia and the United States, get together and agree on certain conditions, we can get a control over huge, gigantic corporations that, as a result of risk-taking and chances of making money, have put us in a perilous position economically. We cannot afford to have companies that are so large in size and committed and interreactive and interconnected that the government of the United States or anywhere in the world cannot afford to allow them to fail. The American market system and the principles we operate under is that's the cleansing mechanism. If you get too greedy, if you make mistakes, if you call the wrong shots, if you're just a bad businessman, you run the risk of failure, and we allow you to fail. But there's such an extent that you can get so gigantic, so interconnected to the system, that the cost of allowing you to fail is too great to all of the people within the system that we have to come by and pump federal funds, bailout money, into these companies to keep them surviving. That we don't ever want to do again. I've experienced it these last 18 months. This bill is all predicated on the idea that in an orderly fashion, we can again take control of our economic system. So this will never happen again. That is huge, greedy, overexposed, overconnected organizations can take us to the brink of meltdown or disaster. And we can have a controlled situation where our market system works and the forces of the market system work, and that we continue our great prosperity under capitalism. I think we can accomplish that. So that's what I'm dedicated to do.
Thank you, Congressman. We will now do a quick poll to receive feedback from all of you. The question is, what issues are you most concerned about? Press 1 for reviving our economy and creating jobs. Press 2 for improving our healthcare system and reducing costs. Press 3 for reducing our dependence on foreign oil. Press 4 for making college more affordable. Press 5 for protecting our Second Amendment rights. Press 6 for reforming our immigration system. And press 7 for other. Once again, we are doing a quick poll to receive feedback from all of you. The question is, what issues are you most concerned about? Press 1 for reviving our economy and creating jobs. Press 2 for improving our healthcare system and reducing costs. Press 3 for reducing our dependence on foreign oil. Press 4 for making college more affordable. Press 5 for protecting our Second Amendment rights. Press 6 for reforming our immigration system. And press 7 for other. And now we will take a question from Glenn from Shikshini. Glenn, please go ahead.
Mr. Congressman.
Yes, Glenn.
I'm a veteran, and I lost a 20-year-old brother in Vietnam. So anytime I hear about any troops being sent anywhere, I kind of cringe. My question is, why can't we spend these billions of dollars on homeland security and secure our own land rather than sending troops overseas to try to battle these terrorists that we're chasing around the world?
Glenn, I think that's an excellent question, and I'll be honest with you, I've posed that question directly to the president not more than 2 weeks ago. And I'm going to support the president's position for his committal of additional troops and expenditure of more money, because quite frankly, you know, under our system, we only have one president, and he's elected by all the people, and it is his constitutional responsibility to make those recommendations. It's our constitutional responsibility, that is in Congress, either financially support that or occasionally to vote for that if there's a resolution of war. I think we ought to very seriously watch what's happening. I think I'm impressed that the president's going to have a reevaluation and has expressed an intent to bring the troops back from Afghanistan in 18 months. If it were me making the decision, I quite frankly think I'd start sooner than that. I'm dismayed that we have been so convinced in our spirit as Americans that we can impose our will and desire on all the peoples of the world. There are just some people who think differently, have different cultures, are not going to follow our desires in life, and we think we can attain that. And one of the arguments I can tell you that I made actually with the president, in one of his speeches he said they've identified 100 al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And if that's the case, we're spending $100 billion to catch them. That's $1 billion a person. We just can't afford that. And the fact is, I think you're correct. What I would say is, look, let's cover them with unmanned aeronautical vehicles. Let's send in the availability or have the availability of special forces to impose them in the country if we see something happening that's disturbing to us. But I don't think we should set about building governments. I don't think we should set about creating infrastructure there. I think we ought to recognize that that country has been occupied by many people. And going back to the proposition you said, look, one human life, American, is more important than trying to solve what have been cultural problems that have existed for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And it's time we come off that kick as Americans or anyone else in the world and realize that we've got to get out of that and just say we have a right to commit troops, we have a right to go to war, we have a right to do these things when it's absolutely essential for the preservation of peace and order in the United States and the protection of the United States citizens, but we can't do it for everyone in the world, and we can't be the policemen of the world. I know that's not the complete answer, Glenn. We just have to keep on top of it. But I'm leaning in your camp as opposed to continuing this thing. I really will not support it long-term to continue. We're not going to be in Afghanistan if I have anything to do about it 5 or 10 years from now. Abby?
Thank you very much for your question, Glenn. And once again, please press *3 if you would like to ask Congressman Kandorsky a question. And we have the results from our poll. The question is, what issues are you most concerned about? 34% of you said reviving our economy and creating jobs. 27% of you said improving our healthcare system and reducing costs. 7% of you said reducing our dependence on foreign oil. 5% of you said making college more affordable. 8% of you said protecting our Second Amendment rights. 11% of you said reforming our immigration system. And 8% of you said other. And we will now take a question from Marie from Sugar Notch. Marie, please go ahead.
Good evening, Congressman.
Good evening, Marie.
My concern is the potential closing of the Ashley Post Office.
Yes.
And what, if anything, are you doing to help save it for us?
Well, we're doing a lot of steps. Quite frankly, our biggest thing is it has only to do with Ashley, but it's Avoca. It's the Postal Service in Wilkes-Barre, and probably anticipated to come any number of additional post offices, not only around our district, but across the United States. We are going through a cultural change and shift in postal service in the United States that is almost unprecedented. The number of letters being mailed, the use of the postal are so changed significantly for the less that we're getting approaches from the Postal Service to the Congress that they're just going into debt billions and billions of dollars, and they have to either find cost containment to bring this down and close some of them or change some of the operations, or else the entire system will fail. So what I'm doing is trying to make all the strongest arguments I can to keep what facilities we have, and I'm particularly spending a lot of emphasis and have over the last decades to keep the distribution center and the Wilkes-Barre post office open. And every time we have a threat of smaller post offices break down. But I have to say that we're going to have to do some depthful analysis. If we want to pay our bills through email, if we want to live in a totally electric society, if we want to communicate on the telephone and in the computer, the internet with email, and not by first-class stamps, we're going to have to recognize we will not have the funds to support what we call the old postal system. And we're going to have to come up with new thinking and thought, maybe in terms of amount of service that's available, maybe from the cost factor, or maybe we can even have computer operations and email set up at postal services or reduce the size of those facilities and combine other business operations with anything we can do to sustain the existence of the Postal Service. It's absolutely essential to have it. A free society such as ours has to have a way of making sure books, magazines, and letters and communications between free citizens is something that's carried on. That's the reason the Postal Service is discussed in the Constitution. It's vital to a free nation, so we have to keep that up. But on the other hand, we can't necessarily run a postal system that was built around the 1950s and expect it to operate profitably in 2010. And the best evidence, it isn't happening. But we'll solve that problem. We may have to subsidize it. We may have to add things. And certainly I'm going to keep a very watchful eye on things like the Ashley Post Office. Thank you. Abby?
Thank you very much for your question. And once again, please press star 3 if you would like to ask Congressman Kandorski a question. And we will now take a question from Tina from West Hazleton. Tina, please go ahead.
Good evening, Congressman Kandorski. My question to you is, I look in the newspaper for jobs, and it just seems that there's hardly any jobs in the newspaper anymore. At one time, you could open up the newspaper, and the columns would be full of jobs. I see more and more temp agencies advertising jobs, and what bothers me the most is that companies hire through temp agencies. They don't provide any insurance for the employee. And is there any kind of breaks for companies or something that can be done in order for employees to be able to obtain insurance?
Medical insurance, yes. Yes. Well, that's exactly... Go on, Tina. I'm sorry.
Also, my husband is self-employed, and his employment is rather seasonal. When he is not working, he can't even collect. Is there anything that could be done for this type of person that is self-employed, and how do they make a living?
You certainly have a whole slew of good questions there. And what really, Tina, in a way that it's very analogous to the question we had on the Postal Service, our system is significantly changing. And we have to update our system and change our system, or else we're going to fall behind in such a way that we can't catch up. An example is the reason we need health care reform in this country is that we have to be able to make sure that people can change jobs, people can get jobs where health insurance isn't offered, and yet they're able to have health insurance. And that's why this whole revolution is occurring on health care and health policy in the country. It's vitally important. We have to think in terms of how can we, in some instances, subsidize people who have seasonal employments up and down so that they get continuity of employment. Sometimes we have to make sure that those seasons can be used for up-training and upskilling, which would help overall the productivity of our society. But these are all new challenges that we've really never had before. And that's why sometimes I wonder that when people come with an individual question of why can't we do this, why can't we do that, or why is this happening, we just aren't sometimes recognizing there are significant cultural, social, political, economic changes occurring with such rapidity that it's unbelievable. And if you just want to really take a second and think about it, just think what you would do if you didn't have a cell phone, what you would do if you didn't have a BlackBerry. What did the people do? We can't even think of living without those instrumentalities. And yet, just 10, 15 years ago, they were unheard of. They've changed the entire makeup of how commerce is carried on, how businesses are carried on, and what we need to do that business. You know, there's going to be a short distance between medical services provided when we electrify the entire system and have total capacity to pull up records all over the place in order to treat people. We're going to be able to be more efficient in treating people. We've already changed our healthcare system from primarily a doctor's treatment and a hospital treatment to drug treatment to a significant capacity. That takes time, takes adjustment, takes change. And quite frankly, I'll tell you, many of us, and I'm one of them, I don't like to change that much, but we have to change. In order to survive, we have to recognize these changes are out there. We have to have new ways and new ideas of how to deal with the changes that are there and that are necessary. And on the other hand, not to get so anxious, confused, or reactionary toward that change to think that we can stop it, because quite frankly, we're not going to be able to stop it. The world has changed, will continue to change, and it's doing it with much faster speed than ever before. And we as humans are just going to have to make sure that we can meet that challenge. I think we can. And Tina, I think that with healthcare, it's going to solve a lot of your problems. That means everybody that gets a job will be able to have healthcare. and we won't have to worry about whether an employer provides it or doesn't employ it. It will mean for your husband that he can have those off periods and have health care, because that health care is going to be guaranteed on a full-time basis. And it's going to mean that he can then upskill and uptrain himself when he has that open time, when he's out of season in whatever work he's doing. But we have to keep our eye on it. We all have to be as productive as we can, and in that productivity, make the funds available so we can carry on a much more sophisticated life than we did in the past. Now, with all that said, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, because it's going to be a tough world to adjust to it. But all of us are in that challenge together, and I think we're going to make it. And I think if we talk 5 years from now, you and I will both say, damn, we made it through, we changed, and it was a success. It was a little painful, but we made it. That's what life is all about. Abby?
Thank you, Congressman. And also, CareerLink is a really great resource, and the Congressman's office can provide that phone number for you. It's 570-825-2200 to reach the Congressman's office, and we can provide the number for CareerLink. And we will now take a question from Bob from Wilkes-Barre. Bob, please go ahead.
Yes, Congressman Jaworski.
Yes.
I want to thank you, first off, for retaining the VA Medical Center here in Wilkes-Barre and renovating it.
Yeah,
and
it's
I'm
going
to have
fight.
To depend on your – I know. And I'm going to have to really depend on you looking out for the best interest of all of us in this health care bill. It's not changing day by day. It's changing hour by hour. And some of the things that I think I – and I think fellow Americans feel about is some of the pork belly that we've seen in it. And when they publicized that $300 million to Louisiana, it hurt, because if you have to buy a vote for something, then the legislation isn't that great. And this is too important to the Republicans and Democrats that we got to do it right this time. And Bill Clinton did have it right, and we didn't vote for it.
Thank you. I agree with you, Bob. We'll try and do that. But keep the faith, as they say. I think we're going to make it through this. It's been a terrible process. As a matter of fact, and I fault sometimes the president for it. I fault those of us in Congress. We've done a terrible job in educating the American people or keeping the process going so that they really understand it. And I've got to tell you, now since it's moved through the House and is over in the Senate, I have a hard time keeping up with it in the Senate, because every day they're changing something that I thought was written in stone, and they're putting some new idea. But when it's all over and done, hopefully we will enact a health care bill. It will not be perfect by a long shot, but it will be a lot better than the present system. It will meet 80% of the needs, at least, that we all have, and then we've got to work to perfect the last 20%, and that can be an ongoing thing. And you're absolutely correct. If we had our brains about us in 1994 and 95 and had enacted what Clinton asked us to do then, we wouldn't have this problem today. But the reason why we can't have this health care bill fail today, it will be another 10, 50, 20 years before we get an opportunity to pass another one. And I think, quite frankly, that'll be too late. Abby?
Thank you very much, Congressman. And once again, please press *3 if you would like to ask Congressman Kandorski a question. And we will now take a question from Bill from Bloomsburg. Bill, please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Congressman Kandorski. My question could be more question, more statement, is this. I still have a hard time figuring out how 535 people, supposedly intelligent, running our country, can't come together and figure that we are, number one, in an economic situation that is terrible, and number two, that we have a health care system that is totally out of whack for the richest country in the world. We have a tendency not to work for the American people, to work for everybody else. 535 people can appropriate money for Iraq and Afghanistan like it's on a tree. But yet when it comes to health care or economic stimulus for us, it costs too much. Is there any explanation for this?
Really, because what happens is all of these things eventually in our system become political issues. And I'll defend some of my colleagues and condemn some of my colleagues and brag about some of my colleagues. we have to recognize those 535 people that make up the Senate and the Congress and the House, they're not monolithic in their thought, and they come from really very, very different countries, if you will. Each state should really be looked at as a different country, and we all meet together, and our experiences in Pennsylvania are entirely different than experiences you'd have in Utah, for instance. They're just as different that if you were looking at Austria and Sweden. And sometimes in America, we just assume because we're called the United States of America and we all speak English, almost practically everybody does, that we're a unified common country. We're really not. We have different habits, different positions. And quite frankly, let me give you an example. You're from down in Columbia County. Don't walk outside and say you're against guns, because you're going to get a reaction from more of your residents down there in Columbia County than if you went outside in New York City and said you were against guns. Because in New York City, they have a whole different taboo toward guns. In our area, we're hunters. We understand what guns are all about. And very often we'd fight for the right to have guns, and we interpret the Constitution as giving us that Second Amendment right to bear arms. But that is not uniform. In New York City, they look at us, or here down here in Washington, they look at us like we're bears or unsophisticated people because we still deal with guns. Yet I have a daughter that lives in New Mexico, and she lives way out in the country in New Mexico. She has to have a gun. There isn't any question. If you go through a lot of the West, that condition prevails. Now, as to whether or not we can get to it, a lot of people have positions about how far the government should go, how far it shouldn't go, whether or not we should pay or contribute to the cost of other things. And then there are people, and when you talked about foreign aid and expending money or carrying on wars for other people, yeah, sometimes we're at a fault for doing as much. Ultimately, though, when I look at the whole picture, I come to the conclusion that we're not going to have perfection, and we shouldn't think about getting it perfect instead of good. And when you look at the United States, it is, in any way you judge it, the most successful experiment on God's earth. We have freedom. We have more goods and services. We have more opportunity than anywhere else in the world. And quite frankly, the best evidence of that is people are walking across our borders to get here. They aren't leaving our borders to get away. Do we have problems? Bet your life we have problems. Are they solvable? I believe they are. But it's going to take a concerted effort by all of us. And I guess what I would say is rather than thinking too poorly about those of us that are trying to represent our people, we're trying to do it as the best we can. There aren't a lot of people that have bad thoughts or evil thoughts in the Congress or in the White House. They really have a desire to do the best they can. Their only perception of the world is significantly different among themselves. They don't see the world in the same way. It's up to us, using the freedom of speech that we have and debate and the opportunity, to try and make people more sensitive to what they don't understand as we see the world, and that we understand how they see the world, and perhaps come a little closer together in part. But I know it's frustrating. I hope what I said at least gives you some comfort. I think about it all the time. Sometimes I can't comprehend why some people have the feelings, the beliefs, or the thoughts they have. But I do understand that's what makes this country glorious. We're so broad, we're so different, and the fact we can, in our diversity, we can still live together, that's an accomplishment. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much for your question. And we will take a question from Joseph from Barnesville. Joseph, please go ahead.
Congressman Kanjorski, good evening to you.
Good evening, Joe.
I have a couple questions and a couple comments here. It appears to me on the surface that what we're doing is we're really mortgaging our grandchildren's future with this out-of-control spending that's going on in Washington. And we're considering, or we already have, agreed to raise the debt ceiling. This scares the heck out of me. As far as when the government runs a, quote, business, you look at the post office, they haven't managed that very well. They're running out of money. they're on the road to going broke. Medicare, they're on the road to going broke. And if health care goes, they're going to be cutting money from Medicare. Social Security, same thing. It's going broke.
Well,
now, regarding, if I may finish, Congressman.
Yeah.
Now, regarding the health care, everyone agrees that the cost of health care is too high, and both parties agree on something about fixing the pre-existing conditions. But the two items that seem like a no-brainer to me are, number one, tort reform, and number two, to be able to sell medical insurance across state lines like every other type of insurance is sold.
Well, that's one of the points, if I can correct you. See, that's a misimpression. Insurance is controlled on a state level, and it cannot be sold across state lines. That's the whole thing. If you were agreeable to nationalize insurance so it could be sold anyway, that would be, for some people, a great benefit. Right now, it can't be done. You may think that you buy insurance against across state lines, but actually your insurance company gets licensed to sell that insurance in every state. They can't sell across the state lines. Tort reform is another perfect example. They will make the argument of tort reform. If how many of us are willing to go to a hospital and have our delivery of nitrogen instead of oxygen, and it destroys our brain when we're just having an appendectomy, for instance, and we just say to ourselves, well, the fact that the doctor or the nurse was drunk doesn't matter. That's just the breaks of the day. I don't think most of us would want to lose the life of a dear one or have the tragedy of a destroyed mind of a dear one because of a mistake that was not just a mistake. Everybody can make mistakes, but there was absolute negligence. So we have a system of correction. It's called tort law. And it's as old as the English Empire. And it doesn't involve government getting involved there. That's private citizens against private citizens represented by counsel. But, Joe, you know what? Let me stop right there because I could go on and go through some of these arguments. I agree with you in many instances. But let me give one example to you that I think should give you a little cheer. We do not have the country we have today because we put our money in banks and got 5% interest. We have the country and the economy and the wealth we have today because we have so many people of great thoughts and ideas that have been able to be inventive over the last 200 years that have created this magnificent country that we have. And all of the problems that we run up against, for instance, take a good picture. I turned on the History Channel tonight and look at America 1860 during the Civil War, or America 1900, when there were practically no paved roads, when there was no human facilities for waste or drinking water or practically any way that you could travel short of going from town to town. And look at America today, where you could go to an airport, get on a plane, and within 12 hours end up anywhere in the world. Or you can go, as I did, to a hospital and have somebody cut your chest open, take your heart out, and fix the innards of your body and then put your heart back in. That's only been able to be done the last 30 years. Prior to that, when you had a problem, you died. Today, we recover that. We fix that. What I'm saying is that what we have to encourage in this country is the atmosphere for great thoughts to prevail, great inventions and great discoveries to be made, a creation of wealth. And let's not get scared. That doesn't mean that we can afford to waste money. It doesn't mean we can throw it away. It means we have to be frugal. It means we have to be attentive to real things. But we shouldn't get ourselves paralyzed to think that we can't have good progress made and that that progress will be so costly as to bring us to destruction. We haven't destroyed ourselves for 220 years, and I won't make the prediction that's going to happen too much sooner in the future. We're going to succeed. We're going to make it through. All I say is in this Christmas season, Let's join hands. Let's realize how human we are. Let's make up for some of the weaknesses and the faults, but let's make the challenge. And, Joe, we'll all get there together. Thank you very much, Joe. And now, Abby.
Thank you, Congressman. And we will now do a quick final poll to receive feedback from all of you. The question is, how useful was this call in helping you learn about what Congressman Kanjorski is doing on issues that are important to you? Press 1 if this call was very useful to you. Press 2 if it was somewhat useful. Press 3 if it was not very useful. And press 4 if it was not useful at all. Again, how useful was this call? Press 1 if it was very useful. Press 2 if it was somewhat useful. Press 3 if it was not very useful. And press 4 if it was not useful at all. And thank you very much for participating. And now Congressman Kanjorski will finish the call.
Oh, Abby, thank you for participating in my telephone town meeting. I'm sorry that not everyone was able to ask a question. I really am sorry about that. We'll try and improve that in the future as we go along. However, if you would like to leave me a voice message with a question or comment, you will have the opportunity to do so in just a moment. If you have any questions, you can call my office at 570-825-2200, and you can visit my website at kanjorski.house.gov. Good night, and thanks again for joining the call.